Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode, or not episode, second hour. Yeah, of the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, November 29th, the year of our Lord, 2014. Which means our Lord has really been Lord a long time. You know, the whole issue of the year of our Lord deal.
Or he's had a lot of years.
Is kings would, before we had a standardized calendar, would just, you know, our emperors or whatever.
Right. Every country had a different, the 12th year of the reign of King Putin, whatever
name.
Getting
a lot of trouble here in a very short period of time, so I'm going to shut my mouth. Okay. there's actually a lot of economic information in the world other than the fact that OPEC decided to leave their production at the same level, which meant that the price of oil would continue to fall, and the stock market went up. Those two had a lot to do with each other, actually. I mentioned earlier this – I was trying to find the exact quote here, but this is the best consecutive quarters of GDP since 2003. And as far as growth in the economy, we see this as an anemic growth. We kind of feel like the recession is still going on or something. In fact, from an economic point of view, which is the big one.
Yeah, it's the only
everything is
one.
Ultimately economics. I hate to say that. It's
true, though.
Yeah. But it's true. And we have a very steady, sustainable growth. And if you want something to give thanks for, in case you couldn't think of anything on Thursday, the fact that you happen to be living in the United States of America has to be really, really, really high on your list. Nobody is threatening to invade us. Not seriously, anyway. The rest of the world has very visible difficulties economically,
which is not a reason to be happy on our own right, but
we don't. That's the issue, and we are basically pulling the world along. We've had basically since 2009, we've had the best economic growth in the world. And when I say that, I don't necessarily mean that our percentage of GDP growth has been higher than that of China. But the dollar value of our GDP growth in any given year is higher than that of China. And very frankly, China is slowing down. By the way, one of the reasons the market went up is because the Chinese announced a rate cut in their the loans they make to banks and so on, the equivalent of our Federal Reserve cutting its rates. Interestingly enough, it probably won't have any effect on their economy.
They've got a lot of zombie banks that really can't make loans to people right now anyway.
And the ones that aren't zombies are interested in keeping the loan rates up because they consider there to be a very high risk of default.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So on that same thread of progress being made here, this is why I wanted to talk about some science. America truly is a wonderful place. And I realize we say that randomly, sporadically throughout our episodes throughout the years, but if you look at doing research just for research's sake, anywhere else in the world, with some distinct exceptions as far as subjects being researched, the United States is by far the best place to be. We've got research coming in, and I'm very aware of this, the research on the cause, for instance, of type 1 diabetes. This is something we're using insulin, which was, you know, developed and figured out that we needed insulin for diabetics about 100 years ago. And yeah, we've gotten better at making the insulin. Now it's made out of human parts instead of sheep or cattle or whatever. But there hasn't been a huge leap forward in what causes diabetes. We know type 2 is happening. We think we know it has a lot to do with diet and how much sugar we're eating. But type 1 is this. It's been this, what causes it? We know there's some kind of genetics involved. Well, there's a lot of research that's coming out that has to do with a virus. It's in the same kind of virus group as polio. It's called the human enterovirus area. And why am I talking about this when we're talking about economics? Because everything is economics. When we consider that more than 90% of the successful medical research that takes place within the borders of the United States. There's a reason for that. It's because we pay our pharmaceutical companies for the drugs. They spend a lot of money on research, and a lot of the things that they begin research on don't amount to anything. So they spend money on things that they never get anything back on so that they can charge on the successful products to pay for all of the research that's actually going on. And we still have the freedom to do that here.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada, they buy from U.S. pharmaceutical companies, or they make their own pharmaceutical companies that only make the generic brands that are based off of patent-expired things that were developed in the United States. The Germans used to do a lot of research. Bayer was a huge area of research, but then the Nazis got involved, and that went all kind of haywire. They still do a lot of research, but on the scope of things, when we look at what's going on in the world of the United States, when we look at the big-named technology companies, if you start listing them off, not only the majority, but over 90% of the big-named technology companies are United States companies. There's a reason for that. The reason is that we compensate people for their work here. We compensate people for their inventions. We look at the concept of an idea as having physical property value. And that's not very well recognized in the rest of the world. If we talk about China being a threat, we've been beating up on China the last hour. We talked about all the problems that China has. China also has this huge, huge group that could do what we're doing and isn't. The number one most populous group of Americans or English speakers in the world is in China. They have more people that speak English in China than speak English in the United States. And that tells you something. They have and the only people that speak English are educated. So they have the ability. We talk about programmers and engineers and things. They're building bridges at a huge rate. They're doing these technological feats of building, but individuals do not get credit, which limits their expansion. It limits their growth. It limits their new ideas.
It also limits their stability.
Vastly limits their stability.
For whatever it's worth, this is Jeff. I'm a great fan, and Jake, I think, is too, of Douglas North.
One of my favorite economists.
The key anchor point is his book, Structure and Change in Economic History, one of three books for which he received the Nobel Prize in Economics in 1993. States that property rights are a key element in the stability of any socioeconomic system. The higher the property rights individuals have, the more stable the system gets. Now, there's a limit to that, but there's an upper limit at a point which you get diminishing returns where the institutions begin to collapse because of excessive property rights, but that's neither here nor there.
You can't hurt other people while enforcing the rights of some.
Right. So the issue,
it's not hurting anyone. Yeah.
The issue that is, in the United States, we have the highest property rights in the world. And
there's a lot of complaints on that from the left.
For whatever it's worth, the highest property rights in the United States are in Texas.
Yeah.
And when we look at the economic performance across the United States of various states since the recession,
you can see the property rights have an impact.
You can definitely see it happening. The other thing is, China is, by restricting those property rights, Russia, by restricting those property rights, they're in competition with us in the world. And I don't just mean import-export. I don't mean the obvious forms of competition. They're in cultural competition.
Yeah.
The reason so many people in China speak English is because our system works so much better than their system. The reason
why they wear business suits instead of things that look like bathrobes.
The reason that the Russians, at least according to people who've been there, choose to keep their cash reserves, their emergency funds, in dollars in a safe is because they look at our system, whether they consciously think about this or not. They look at the system that we call the United States of America, and they conclude that it is the most stable system on the planet. It is the most robust system on the planet. Actually,
they don't like it. They still admit it.
I'm going to extend that system. It's called the Anglo-American system. If you look, and if you know, it's one thing I wrote about this in my master's thesis. But the Anglo-American system is the most healthy socioeconomic system. Is the most healthy, robust system on the planet or in the history of the world. And the rest of the world is quickly copying it, and they think they can copy little bits and pieces
of
it.
Just say, I'll take the parts that work and not worry about the rest.
But it doesn't work that way.
You need the parts that – you need failure to have success. So you have to have failure.
And if you just go out and we do pretty regularly and take a look at the economies of the world, you'll discover that there are two places in the world where the economic growth is healthy, where the total economy seems to be both stable, robust, and healthy. And that is Great Britain and the United States. As an interesting little side note here, you know, the Scots, by a small margin, decided not to become independent.
Correct.
And with the price of oil, shortly after they made that decision, the price of oil dropped about 50%. You know, it's now down to half of what it was.
Right, right.
And I think the irony is, at this price of oil, all of their arguments for why they could be independent,
which just went out the window,
evaporated.
Yeah, there's no way they could have done it at this with this price of oil.
One of the things that, if I could change the subject and continue here in a little bit of a monologue,
sure.
One of the things that is very, very significant in the world that is a uniform principle, and I want you to think about this, listeners, if there are any, is that whatever you're dependent upon is temporary. I want you to listen again as I say that. Yeah. Whatever you're dependent upon, or the thing upon which you are dependent, if I'm going to be this correct, anything upon which you are dependent is temporary. And if you have a portfolio, if you have a job, if you have a skill set, it's temporary. Now, just how temporary it is, that's going to vary, and it's kind of hard to predict.
Yeah, there. Just as a quick example, people that were blacksmiths thought that this was a thing that would never change, ever.
Right.
Why would it ever change? Hundreds of years it didn't change.
Mm-hmm. And the most robust, healthy company in the Dow Jones Industrial Average in the year 1900 was U.S. Leather.
Right.
Which, by the way,
number one transmission of energy in the world.
Did cease to exist without a purchaser. It simply went to zero.
Yeah. U.S. Leather, they provided the belts in all the factories, and rubber came along and replaced it. They were the things that kept all the gears running,
and they were the suspension systems in vehicles.
And the accelerator in the horse and buggy was the whip. So you had to have this in order to use the highest level of technology.
So whenever you look at something upon which you are dependent, it's important to recognize that you need to have a plan for what happens when that either temporarily. Well, you don't have to worry as much about it permanently going away in the United States, although you do in Russia and a lot of other places. The government collapsing, which is something we fantasize about and write books about. And
zombie apocalypse.
People gather M16s in their houses. And so three M16s obviously are easier to shoot than one.
Shoot one in each hand and a foot.
And a foot. That's just something that is right up there with an asteroid dropping down and smacking into the middle of the United States.
It will happen eventually, just not
But
right
not
now.
Not in our lifetimes.
Hopefully.
So the point is, though, that the temporary shock of, for instance, China suddenly going into meltdown is one of those things that could easily put a 30% drop or maybe even more
in the U.S. stock market.
In the stock market and across the board. And if you have stuff, liquid assets in the United States that are reasonably secure, you're probably in good shape. If you don't, then you're going to have to sell from your stocks in a down market, which can be devastating to you over the long term. And it's a matter of diversification.
That's why we talk about dry powder. Keep some dry powder in your portfolio, too.
And having a long-term view of things. Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. The numbers are still in here the same. Still in here the same. Still the same.
In here?
Calling us. Yes,
Yoda,
anyway.
You are.
Yes. Yes, I am Yoda. You are. 773-1400 in East Bell County, or
1-866-597-1400.
Somebody called while I was talking, and they hung up before I could even get to them. I don't know. This very must be ADHD or something.
I saw a great comic strip of Yoda reading Dr. Seuss, Sam I Am. His caption is, "Like this I do."
Makes perfectly good sense to me. And it's actually a little too early to play commercials.
So right.
And, you know, the issue is we are either being very, very good or nobody's listening. I'm not sure which. Anyway, inflation remains below 2%.
I'm going to make another quick...
For the 30th month.
I'm going to predict something.
Okay.
I'm going to predict...
The sun will rise tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's a... the world will turn, which causes the appearance of the sun rising. Yeah.
Yes, okay.
And my prediction is going to be about consumer spending during this holiday season. It's going to be higher than people expect it to be. And that's...
Okay.
That's saying some things.
Presuming they had an expectation.
Right. Well, the economists have an expectation, and they expect a slight growth over last year. I expect a major growth over last year. I expect significant growth, above 7% growth over last year in the spending during the holiday season. And that's based some on anecdotal information, but the anecdotal information is stuff that I've been collecting from all over the country. And when I get that many, it starts losing its anecdotalness. I don't have numbers to back it, but a non-formal survey, people are sitting on more money than they've had in a long time in savings.
That's true.
Their debt levels are a lot lower. They're a lot more comfortable with where their credit cards are. A lot of the people that have been looking for jobs have recently gotten them. Mm-hmm. They've been living at very low income levels, and the income levels are coming up. They're feeling better, and that tends to lead to more magnanimity in our giving, and that's what happens this time of year. And we've got good sales coming in. You know, the companies are terrified that they're not going to get good sales, and usually it's when they're terrified that they're not going to get good purchases going on that they get the good purchases, because they have lowered the prices to a point people go, "Oh, this is great." It's when they say, "Oh yeah, we're not worried about it. We expect our sales to be the same as last year, or no, we're not going to cut so much." That's when the sales don't happen, because they get overconfident.
And we are in, and I say this carefully, we are in a deflationary environment. We're not experiencing actual deflation in the United States, but year over year, the consumer price index, 1.7%, is below the Federal Reserve target. And 1.7% is low enough that there are certain elements in it that have to be declining in price. And one of the problems they're running into, that the government of Japan and the Central Bank of Japan is running into right now, is trying to change a very, very difficult thing that we had during the Great Depression, which is an expectation of deflation.
Yeah.
We are developing that very quickly.
It's happening. We're waiting to buy things until they go on sale.
Right. We wait until the price comes down before we buy something. That is an inherent break. It's an inherent slowdown in the economy. And it's developed in Europe hugely at this point. The banks hesitate to loan to people in a deflationary environment, because whatever you have as collateral, they expect to be worth less in the future.
Right. And so, in the event that you actually have a loan from a bank that lasts a long period of time and you get a deflationary trend, that means that people get paid less. Now, the dollars are worth more, but you get paid less.
Right.
And you have fewer dollars, but you still have to make payments on a loan that you made for inflated dollars.
And in those people who think, who are still believing the Glenn Becks and the other empty heads that were talking about this, they weren't empty heads. They were actually
they were scared based on their own personal experiences.
Some of them were scared. I think most of them were
just paid a lot of money.
Profit mongering.
Yeah.
But Glenn Beck was one of them. But the issue is that if you doubt that we're in a deflationary environment, then look at the numbers and think to yourself about your own behavior and look at and talk to your friends, you'll find out that people have much larger savings today than they had in the past. Why do we have larger savings? Why are we paying off debt? And the answer is, it is a perfectly rational response to deflation. Because if I've got money in the bank and a savings account, if it's paying me zero interest, which it did during the 1930s and the 40s, by the way, but we have deflation going on, it's actually worth more in the future because you can buy more in the future with it than you can in the present.
Yeah, and if you put $100 in the bank in January and then you wanted to buy a $100 TV with it, and then at the end of the following year you use that $100 on the same TV and it's worth $90, or in the way TVs are going now, it's now worth $80.
You got a roughly a 10 or 20%
rate of return on your money.
Yeah, and that's a perfectly rational thing to do, and people do that, and they're doing it right now. Why would somebody want to pay off a debt? Because the debt is growing more expensive with each passing day because we have deflation.
Yeah, think about the number of items when you're talking about electronics that you can buy with your dollars today versus a year ago versus 5 years ago versus 10 years ago, if they even existed 10 years ago.
If we pulled rental value out of the consumer price index, which is a very artificial number, but it's very real. In other words, if we pulled the issue of rents.
A very real and artificial.
Yes, only in economics.
Only in economics.
Yeah. It's artificial in the sense that most of the people who are listening to this radio program own their own homes.
Right.
Many of them have them paid for. So from their perspective,
their rent doesn't go up or down. It doesn't change at all.
Including the rental value of their home artificially in the consumer price index artificially inflates it. Why is that? Because
people are having trouble getting loans right now.
People, because of a combination of student loans and the recent history with mortgages, a lot of people can't get mortgages. So rents are going up across the board. And so they impute that the value of your home is going up because of its rental value, its potential rental value.
Even though you're not renting your home to anyone.
And
except
despite
yourself.
The fact that the real sale price of your home may not be going up. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if you could tell me if there's a correlation between the lower price for a barrel of oil and electric utilities profit and stock price. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
It's a little more complicated than that simple number because a lot of electric utilities own oil reserves, and they have contracts.
Yeah, the futures contracts are, first let me say how they're similar to airlines, and then I'm going to say how they're not.
Right.
So an airline or an oil-dependent or coal-dependent energy company, they buy their contracts over long periods so that they have some stability in the pricing structure. And until we get to the end of the contracts and they get new contracts, we're not going to see a change there. When it comes to another area, and when it comes to utilities, when you're talking about power, for instance, there are other factors that come into play. The first factor, which seems like it would be the last, but is actually the most important factor, is whether or not the utility is operating as a monopoly sponsored by a governmental organization. And a lot of them are. A lot of power companies are sponsored by cities, and they're the only ones allowed in certain areas. Other areas have been deregulated. So you have to split there. In areas like Houston or Austin, where there is a city-sponsored power company, whether it's gas or electricity or both, the profit margin has to be approved every year by the city council or the governmental entity. So they will lower the prices to keep the profit margin about the same, which is there's a huge argument back and forth between the corporation and the city about what their profit margin actually is, and they get expert witnesses, and silliness happens there. And go ahead.
There's a key element here in the question, the listener's question. Oil does not provide more than a small minority of the electric power in the United States. it's provided mainly by coal and natural gas. Now, admittedly, natural gas prices have come down, but not as much as oil prices.
There's some nuclear, some wind, and some sun as well.
Don't forget the water.
The water is involved. There is hydroelectric.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that impact the price of electricity. There's also a lot of things that stabilize the price of electricity, not the least of which is the public utility commissions in the various states, who don't allow either rises or falls. And you may have recently, we did, receive an offer to pay from TXU. Well, they actually, another company.
Not them anymore.
Well, that's actually still called TXU.
Okay.
They're owned by somebody else, but still they're one of the supply power providers.
Right.
Like where you have Oncor, who handles the electric power lines, and obviously they're not very much affected by the price of oil. But we got an offer from some other company that wanted to provide electricity across those Oncor power lines at a substantially lower rate than we're currently paying. And when my wife went to cancel the TXU service to get the other service because it was much less expensive, they asked why. She told them why. She was put in contact with somebody who cut. By the way, if you got TXU service, contact them. If you threaten to leave, they will cut your cents per kilowatt hour in half.
Wow.
How can they afford to, they were at record lows before. I mean, when we got them because it was dirt cheap compared to what we used to pay. Well, how can TXU afford to come down so far and still make us this offer? And by the way, the offer is only once a year. We have to call in and see if we can keep that.
The answer is deregulation. Competition causes efficiencies.
But they can also bank on the fact it's costing them less to generate power right now because of the low price of fuel. So you can go. And now the trick would be if you could somehow get them to lock in these low rates.
If you want to make the bet that these are as low as they're going to go.
Very frankly, it's $65 roughly a barrel.
It's a fair rate. I would say it at 70 is a fair rate, but we're going to see it drop even lower.
And for whatever it's worth, the oil shale development will continue because the money's already there.
Yeah, it's already been spent.
It's what's called sunk capital, and they're going to continue to develop where they're developing. Now, if the price of oil stayed in the $60 range for 10 years, we would see a dramatic, which, by the way, it might do. We might see it in the $40 to $60 range for a long time. I don't know this, but it's happened in the past. Whenever oil is spiked, as it did in the early 1970s.
It gets beat back down and stays there for a while.
There's a tremendous amount of development goes on, and there's a tremendous amount of lag that follows that development. Among other things, this is one of the earth-shaking items that...
Yeah, shale is earth-shaking. I see what
literally,
you're getting.
No, well, that wasn't intended as a pun, but this is one of those things that we tend to overlook. The fact that we are effectively in the United States today energy independent.
Yep.
We have the capability. We're not doing it because we like that light, sweet stuff we import from
Saudi Arabia,
and we have the only refineries for Venezuelan oil, any significant refineries for Venezuelan oil, and they're designed for heavy crude. There's a lot of reasons that we're importing and exporting at the same time, but
we
have the capability of being energy independent right now. And so we are continuing on that path, and as we do so, there's a tremendous amount of capital that's been invested in this. The price of oil is likely to continue to fall because there's too many nations out there that have become dependent on selling something they have, which is what I was warning you people about, about their retirement portfolios.
Yeah, here's a great example of that. There are people that become dependent on a stream of income that has been promised to them for long periods of time. Saudi Arabia.
Are you talking about the annuity companies or Saudi Arabia?
Saudi Arabia and the annuity companies and anybody that has a pension, Social Security. Anytime you have a promise of a stream of income that, yes, you have earned through some method, that's why it's called an entitlement, you feel entitled to it. The Saudis get a huge subsidy on their gasoline. just for living in Saudi Arabia. They get a free education from kindergarten all the way through college graduation because they live in Saudi Arabia. What do they learn in that time period? Well, I'm not exactly sure, because the geologists and the engineers and the developers of oil, which you would think the Saudis would be putting a lot of people through college to do that because it's what they're dependent on, tend to be Texans. They Yep. tend to be Texans, and American companies are the ones that do most of the development, even for the British, even for Texans tend to be involved out there. That is a huge body of knowledge that they are just depending on. Now, if we get to be in a place where we're completely energy independent here, they're going to lose a lot of what they consider an entitlement. And if the United States government racks up too much debt and doesn't get enough revenue, then the entitlements that all of us have been promised aren't going to be there either.
Well, there's, coming back to the oil price, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal from November 23rd about the reason that, if outside of Texas at least, again, thank God we live here, the price of electricity may rise substantially across the northern states. And the reason is the quantity of oil and grain that's being shipped from the western United States to the eastern United States is breaking all previous records.
We're filling up the railroads.
And the railroads are jammed, and it is more profitable for them to haul grain and oil than it is to haul coal.
Right.
And most of the utilities across the northern United States, where the winters get really, really cold, burn coal, and they have actually filed a series of actions with federal regulators on railroads to try to make Burlington Northern, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, BNSF, improve the maintenance on their tracks and build more tracks quickly. Well, like it's going to affect this winter? No, it's a little late for that.
Yeah.
But the point is that they don't have enough coal to make it through the winter, they're concerned about, which means that the prices will go up. What's that?
All they have to do is start misbehaving and let Santa bring it to them. He can bring it into their socks.
I don't know that he would be able to bring a sufficient volume of coal.
I mean, if everyone was sufficiently bad, if enough people were sufficiently bad, they could. BNSF might lose all of their freight coal. I think that would be a much more efficient means. Rudolph doesn't charge for his transportation.
It's a question whether he can get the volume up, because he's got to make all those deliveries on one day.
He already makes all those deliveries. I mean, it's just
Having enough coal and then getting it from the socks to the utility companies.
Oh, that would be a problem. Yeah.
You have to burn gasoline to do that. Yeah. They'd probably raise the price of gasoline.
Oh, man. So I didn't think it all the way through.
Economics is a very complicated subject. You really need to pay attention.
I thought I found a solution there. Sorry, Rudolph. You're fired.
Speaking of economics, we're going to play some more commercials. I know you don't like this, but this isn't free. There is no such thing as a free lunch. You have to pay with commercials, see?
Yeah, we're going to pay for our lunch with
commercials.
No, wait a minute.
No, we don't actually get paid for this. But anyway, we are going to play some Town Square and KTEM's commercials. And when we're done, if you would like to give us a call and ask a question or interject a thought into our silliness, you're certainly welcome to do so. 773-1400 is the number in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400.
And that is, of course, dependent upon it being Saturday, November 29th, wherever you are. But we'll be back after these commercials. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And the telephone numbers in here have not changed, just in case you thought they had and you couldn't call. If this is November 29th, the Saturday following Thanksgiving of the year 2014, then you can give us a call at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I think we've gotten one call.
We had a call. Yeah, well, we had two calls, but one of them didn't stay around.
Well, yeah, but that didn't count. We can't really, you know, it's kind of like the Census Bureau. If you've got an address but nobody's there, then you probably don't have an address.
So personal income.
Unless it's in Gettysburg.
Right. Then everyone knows that there's a Gettysburg address.
Right.
Yeah.
We got a telephone call.
People ask to be shipping information. Real quick, let me hit personal income, then we'll hit the caller. October.
Don't hit the caller.
Oh, right. I won't hit the caller.
You can knock personal income, but go ahead.
All right. The personal income growth is very real, and it's very much happening in the United States right now. It was up 0.2% in October, which...
Whoa.
What does that matter?
This is exactly how much inflation was up.
But over the last year, personal income is up 4.1%.
That's good.
That is huge. This is the thing that's been waiting in our economic recovery. People talk about the income hasn't increased with the jobs coming back online.
Where was the income? Was it in the upper half of earners or the bottom half of earners?
This is going to be in the lower income earners.
Good, good. That's a good sign.
Yeah, so this disposable personal income also increased by 0.2%. And it's up 3.9% from a year ago.
Let's just hope they dispose of it.
Yeah, okay. Just go around disposing of your personal income because it's up. So
right.
Go and dispose it.
Right. And
properly. Influence the economy.
We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jeff and Jake.
Good morning.
Good morning. Do I hear a flying fox?
This is from your friend, the famous flying fox.
Yes, it's very good to hear your voice.
Well, I listened to you the last few minutes, and there are two items that I think your listeners might be interested in.
Well,
Go ahead.
Well, one is the issue of the laying pipelines across the United States, and the second issue is the involvement in the federal government and the movement of oil across interstate boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to remind those of you that are not old enough to remember that the big oil line controversy in the 50s, in the early 50s, late 40s, early 50s, was called the Big Inch. And it was a 36-inch pipeline running from Texas to the East Coast to furnish natural gas to the folks up there that wanted it. Now, I worked for the company then, Hummel Oil Refining Company, and we were finding lots of gas up in the panhandle of Texas. And a lot of people don't realize what that means, but anyway, we had a surplus of gas down here, and they wanted it up northeast, so the Hummel Company financially backed the lay and laid what they call the Big Inch from Texas up to in the New York area.
Mm-hmm.
Natural gas was being sold to Texas at 25 cents, was being sold down here at $1.25 per 100 million cubic feet of gas.
Wow.
That's what Austin, Texas was paying for it, $1.25 for a million cubic feet.
Well, people know Texans have a lot of gas.
Right.
Yeah, we had a lot of gas, and we're not ashamed of it. So we built the gas. We financed the pipeline up to the northeast, and guess what? The federal government, in the first place, it didn't cause any environmental problems. In the second place, the federal government says, wait a minute. You can't sell that gas for $1.25 up here. We will pay you 25 cents. The Hummel Company said, we're losing a lot of money. Well, it doesn't make any difference. That's the most you can charge for it up here. So the Hummel Company had to start shutting down gas wells in the panhandle. Now, in everyday parlance, that means they closed the valve on a man's well, and we were only allowed by the Railroad Commission to drill one well for 640 acres. Now, under the lease of an oil company, they shut down the well when it was still producing, which means our company continued to pay royalties to the owner without producing any gas.
Who was president then?
That was Truman's. That was in Truman's era. Well, at any rate,
darn Democrats.
I wanted to say that, so there's the two things. The price of fuel gets all screwed up when the federal government gets involved. And
you have got that one right on the head, sir.
For all those for all those people out there that are listening to you, there's a lot of them that are they're hardcore one way and hardcore the other, but there's a lot of people that really don't understand what all this environmental thing is about laying a pipeline. Well, it's all baloney, folks, because we've laid pipelines across the country for 150 years, you know, and there's always a problem somewhere, but so is everything else.
Well, the issue...
We used to pay. In fact, I flew with a guy that was a pipeline patrol pilot, and his job was every day he got in a little Cessna 140, and he flew up that pipeline at from 200 to 500 feet above the pipeline looking for any leaks or something like that. So I know firsthand that oil companies are very, very protective of that pipeline, and we shouldn't be. If you're uninformed, well, use this as a little information. It's all baloney.
Well, it's a matter, for instance, the pipeline coming out of Canada that the big...
Yeah, the Keystone
pipeline issue. The pipeline's already there. It's just a matter of making them a little bigger and putting up shortcut in.
Yeah, there's a big shortcut across.
It is literally, in this case, a line in the sand. In other words, it is on both sides. The presence or absence of the Keystone pipeline is not a significant economic issue. It is a ideological issue at this point.
That is the truth.
And it is, like so many other things out there, it is a big stink over a small item, but that's a battle point. And if the environmentalists believe that
they
want to slow down the economy, they think too many people are wealthy, and if they make everybody a little more poverty-stricken, if they'll reduce the wealth of
that's
the...
That's really not what's going on. That's a biased view of what... from their perspective. From their perspective, they don't see... They're saying a disaster could happen. It hasn't happened, but a disaster could happen.
Their writings about it said, all this is going to do is enhance the wealth of the already too wealthy people.
Right, and that's part of the idea. You're bringing this oil line across land that is untouched, and to some extent that's true. The Sioux Nation has a reservation that it's got to cross. And
they have reservations about that.
Yeah, they voted against it already.
Fellas, you're running out of time, and I'm running out of time, I guess, but I would like to... Most of what I've got to say is for your audience. I know you guys know a lot of this that they don't know, but maybe from a third voice with no physical, financial, any other kind of attachments, if I give you information, it might sway a few thinkers. I'd like to mention that at one time on a Sunday, I was sitting down having lunch when I got a phone call, and it's a quick trip to New Haven, Connecticut. The vice president of Hummel Oil and Company was called. Immediately, go up there. They've got an oil spill at New Haven, Connecticut. And Hummel Oil is involved. And so I get up from my Sunday lunch dinner and drive and fly Mr. Venn, who was the president then, vice president then, up to New Haven, Connecticut. Thousands of gallons of oil spilled in the harbor there. And thousands of bird fowl were... This is a foul joke, I guess. Birds were killed everywhere, covered in oil.
Yeah, they were fouled.
Well, by Monday, Mr. Ben called me and asked me to hire a helicopter, which I did, and we flew all over the area up there to photograph these dead birds. We found one.
Well, yeah,
one
that's
bird,
it.
One bird, and that was it. They were having demonstrations in the street down in New York, which we went down there and quelled that.
Well, are you familiar with
so much of this is merely hoopla by the media to sell newspapers.
Yeah, well, are you familiar with the speech, the spot speech about the Mexican invasion of the United States, and they were looking for the spot of blood? Where was it? Who got hurt?
What time was this? When?
This was in the 1830s, 1840s.
Right.
It was in the 1840s.
1840s. And then, you know, this is after Texas. And so, you know, the Spanish or the Mexicans basically invaded, and then Teddy, this was early 1900s, so Teddy Roosevelt went down there at one point.
The spot speech was given by Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, yeah, that was 1930.
Before he was president.
That's right. Where is the spot? Why is it that we did this? And people keep bringing up these rational arguments against an irrational thing. Of course, you know, a bird died. Do you not realize how Americans feel when birds die? You know, this last Thursday, there was a great deal of
angst.
Of people sitting around tables and looking with a great deal of emotion at dead birds. This is a pastime in America. We put a lot of weight on dead birds.
Particularly
on
Thanksgiving.
We put a lot of weight on for dead birds.
Very,
get lots of weight.
Right. Very rarely, I have noticed, do people, when they give their Thanksgiving prayers, give thanks for the dead bird.
It's true.
Well, I don't know, fellas, but you know, you may know that I spent 41 years, 10 months, and 8 days in the military, one way or the other. And I spent a lot of time watching the channel on TV that gives a good history. Like right now, they've got a series of Apocalypse World War One, and the reason the war started has great interest to me. But I wonder, you two, if you might remember the Spanish-American War, which very few people ever speak of, how the Hearst newspapers were the most effective in getting that war started, especially with the so-called torpedoing of the U.S. warship in Havana Harbor,
which
later on they found wasn't torpedoed at all. It was an internal explosion.
That's it.
But it started the war, and the newspapers are the one that did it.
Yeah.
So
when the newspapers get faster than the diplomats, that's a problem.
People ought to be careful about what they read. You know, I think as Will Rogers said, if you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. If you read the newspaper, you're misinformed.
Actually, today, Mr. Fox, the issue is not reading the newspaper, because very few people do. The issue is if you listen to a 24-hour news cable, if you don't listen, well, at least here in Central Texas, if you don't listen to Fox, you're uninformed. If you do listen to Fox,
you're misinformed.
You're misinformed.
Well, that's true with any of the major news outlets, though.
And that's true. That's true across the board. I haven't mentioned Fox because that's what people listen to here.
Hopefully, people listening to us are just less misinformed.
That's right. Well, they could be misinformed for listening to us. Okay. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks for the call.
Okay.
I don't want to disagree with you, but I'm really agreeing. But I know that there's certain misinformation that you get over Fox News. But I would say it was the best effort at balanced news that I can find anywhere. The local newspaper here, I think, is a good source of balanced.
It is.
News.
But if you, generally speaking, I like the Wall Street Journal, but I read it. I don't listen to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Good luck. Good listening to you.
Talk
take
to you
care, sir.
Did I give you a copy of my last book?
Yeah, I think you did.
All right.
Did he? I haven't seen it yet.
You can give one to Jake.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
No, bye-bye.
And this is the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake McClure.
We're almost out of time.
I can finish that piece about personal income. We were talking about that. And disposable income up. This is part of the reason why I am thinking that this year the holiday spending is going to be a lot higher than what is expected, is people have more money.
I wanted to add one thing before the show is over. The program is over. IRS recently said that you can include an annuity in your IRA. I read an article in Barron's about how wonderful that was. You could reduce your RMDs by including an annuity in the IRA, and you have a guaranteed income.
RMDs would be required minimum distributions.
Be careful. This term guaranteed is being thrown around.
Careful.
The mere fact that somebody is guaranteeing an interest rate for the rest of your life puts them at risk. And the guarantee is no better than the company that's guaranteeing it. And I noticed that they are marketing very, very heavily. The annuity companies, they're the only major financial institution in the United States that's not backed by federal insurance right now, which means there is a bigger risk there than you may think. That's all I wanted to close out.
They're also the ones yelling the loudest about guarantees. Well, if you would like to contact us off the air, during the week we have people that are actually live and answering the phones. During the weekend we have voicemail waiting. If you'd like to reach that locally, it's
947-1111.
You can also reach that voicemail toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and listen to podcasts. You can email us directly, Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com.
Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas, News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.